Hey everyone, welcome back to the Sandstorm Podcast. I'm your host, Eric Cochran. So, have you ever felt like the ground is shifting beneath your feet? Like the rules of the game keep changing and you're struggling just to keep up? Well, that's the reality for America's biggest banks right now. Picture this. You're a giant financial institution, one of the pillars of our economy. You've weathered recessions, market crashes, even a global pandemic. But now you're facing an enemy that's harder to predict and even harder to fight. That enemy, rising interest rates and the uncertainty they bring. On Friday, banking titans JP Morgan Chase, Wells Fargo, and Citigroup all reported their first quarter earnings. And on the surface, things looked pretty good. Profits and revenues were better than expected. Consumers are still spending. Businesses are still borrowing. JP Morgan CEO Jamie Dimon even declared, quote, "It's quite clear the American economy is strong." But if you listen closely, you can hear the undercurrent of concern in these earnings calls, the notes of caution and hedged bets. Because while higher interest rates have been a profit bonanza for banks over the past year, that gravy train is starting to slow down, and the tracks ahead are looking a lot more treacherous. You see, banks make money by charging interest on loans. And when rates are high like they are now, that's usually a good thing for their bottom line. But there's a catch, because to lend out money, banks need deposits. Everyday folks and businesses parking their cash in savings accounts and CDs. And with interest rates rising, those deposits are getting a lot more expensive for banks to attract and keep. It's a delicate balancing act. And according to the latest forecasts from JP Morgan, Wells Fargo, and Citi, that balance is getting harder and harder to strike. All three banks warned that their net interest income, the difference between what they pay on deposits and charge for loans, would be muted this year as higher rates force them to shell out more to depositors. For JP Morgan, net interest income actually shrank last quarter for the first time since 2021, and for the year, they're expecting it to be flat. Wells Fargo and Citi are projecting declines. As Wells Fargo CFO Mike Santomassimo put it, quote, "Rates might be higher than what people expected a week ago. We do have to wait and see how clients are going to react." Translation: the days of easy money are over. The Fed's aggressive rate hikes, once a boon for bank profits, are now becoming a double-edged sword. And if rates stay higher for longer, as many now expect, banks could find themselves in an increasingly tight spot. But it's not just about profits, because what's happening in the banking sector reverberates across our entire economy. When banks are confident, they lend more freely. Businesses can invest, expand, create jobs. Consumers can buy homes, cars, start businesses of their own. But when banks pull back, when they tighten their purse strings and grow more cautious, it acts like a brake on economic growth. And that's the fear now stalking the market. Since those bank earnings came out on Friday, their stocks have taken a beating. Shares of JP Morgan had their worst day in nearly 4 years. The KBW NASDAQ Bank Index is down almost 7% in April alone. Investors are recalibrating their expectations, bracing for a new era of higher-for-longer rates and the challenges that come with it. But this isn't just a story about banks or interest rates or stock prices. It's a story about how financial forces shape our lives and our livelihoods, about the invisible currents that can lift us up or pull us under. And right now, those currents are looking choppier than they have in a long time. So let's dive a little deeper into what's actually going on with these banks, and more importantly, what it means for the rest of us. Because the reality is, when you're talking about institutions that collectively hold trillions of dollars in assets, what happens on Wall Street inevitably ripples down to Main Street. On one level, the big banks are doing just fine. The U.S. economy is still chugging along, and that's been a tailwind for their business. Consumers are spending on their credit cards. Companies are taking out loans. Even the moribund market for deals and IPOs is starting to show some signs of life. Citigroup's investment banking revenue jumped 32% last quarter. JP Morgan's rose 21%. Not too shabby. But, and there's always a but these days, there are also some troubling undercurrents, some warning signs that the good times might not roll on forever. First and foremost, there's the specter of sticky inflation and the Fed's ongoing battle to tame it. Citigroup CEO Jane Fraser said that a soft landing for the U.S. economy now looks more likely. But she also cautioned that internationally, quote, growth looks poised to slow in many markets. And here at home, the data is starting to tell a more nuanced story. Yes, consumers are still spending, but they're also starting to lean more on their credit cards to do it. Loans are rising faster than purchases. And worryingly, the number of folks falling behind on those loans is starting to tick up too. Net charge-offs, or loans the banks don't expect to collect, rose sharply at J.P. Morgan, Wells Fargo, and Citi compared to a year ago. Meanwhile, the once red-hot housing market is looking distinctly cooler as mortgage rates remain elevated. Originations are down across the board, and commercial real estate? Don't even get me started. That sector has been flashing red for a while now as the value of office buildings and shopping malls crater in the wake of the pandemic. Even Jamie Dimon, not one to mince words, said there's no light at the end of the tunnel yet when it comes to commercial real estate. Now, to be clear, the big banks are diversified enough to weather these challenges. They've got deep pockets and multiple streams of revenue, but not every institution is so lucky. The recent implosion of several regional banks, from Silicon Valley Bank to Signature Bank, has sparked fears of a broader crisis in the industry. Smaller, less diversified lenders could be especially vulnerable if the economy takes a turn for the worse. And then there's the elephant in the room, the Federal Reserve. The central bank's rapid-fire interest rate hikes over the past year have been a major driver of bank profits. But now that tailwind is turning into a headwind. Banks are having to pay more to attract deposits, even as demand for loans could start to wane if rates stay elevated. It's a classic squeeze. The Fed has indicated it's not done hiking rates yet, not until inflation is well and truly tamed. But increasingly, there are worries that the medicine could end up being worse than the disease. That in the quest to cool off price increases, the Fed might just tip the economy into a recession instead. That's the tightrope the banks, and all of us really, are walking right now, trying to navigate an economy that's still growing, but also showing some cracks, trying to wring out inflation without wreaking havoc in the process. It's a high-stakes balancing act, and right now the path forward is looking increasingly narrow. So while the big banks might have the resources to survive and even thrive in this environment, not everyone is so fortunate. The repercussions of the Fed's actions and the bank's reactions will be felt far and wide in the housing market, in the job market, in the day-to-day financial realities of millions of Americans. The question now is whether policymakers can stick the landing, or whether in trying to solve one problem, they might just end up creating a whole host of new ones. Only time will tell. But one thing is for sure. The decisions made in the halls of power, in the boardrooms of Wall Street, in the coming months will shape the economic reality for the rest of us for years to come. You know, as I've been following this story and digging into the details, I keep coming back to one fundamental question. What does all of this volatility, all of this uncertainty, tell us about the state of our economy and the way it's being managed? Because let's be clear, the challenges facing the banking industry didn't come out of nowhere. They're the direct result of the choices made by policymakers, particularly at the Federal Reserve. The same Fed that kept interest rates near zero for years, fueling an everything bubble, and is now hiking rates at the fastest pace in decades to try to clean up the mess. It's a whiplash-inducing reversal. And it's one that banks, businesses, and everyday Americans are all struggling to navigate. The rules of the game keep changing, and it seems like every time you think you've got a handle on things, the ground shifts beneath your feet once again. This kind of erratic stop-start policymaking has consequences. It breeds uncertainty and instability. It makes it harder for businesses to plan for the future, harder for individuals to make sound financial decisions. And it creates the very conditions for the kind of financial fragility we're seeing in the banking sector now. But it's not just the Fed. The government's response to the recent bank failures, while perhaps necessary in the short term to prevent a wider panic, also raises troubling questions, the special fees being imposed on healthy banks to cover the cost of bailing out their struggling peers. It's a classic case of moral hazard. of punishing the prudent to protect the reckless. This kind of intervention, however well-intentioned, distorts market incentives. It sends the signal that excessive risk-taking will be rewarded, that losses will be socialized while profits remain private. And in the long run, that's a recipe for more instability, not less. Now, I'm not saying there's an easy answer here. Crafting sound economic policy is an enormously complex challenge, especially in a world as interconnected and rapidly changing as ours. But I do think there are some principles we'd do well to remember. First and foremost, humility. The idea that a small group of experts can fine-tune something as intricate as the U.S. economy, it's hubris, plain and simple. The Fed's track record speaks for itself. Time and again, their projections have proven wrong. Their policies have had unintended consequences. A little more intellectual humility, a little more acknowledgement of the limits of their knowledge, that would go a long way. Second, a respect for market forces. Now, I'm not saying markets are perfect, far from it, but the price system, the process of supply and demand, these are powerful tools for conveying information and driving efficiency. When we distort those signals through excessive intervention, we do so at our peril. And finally, a focus on the long term. So much of our economic policymaking seems driven by short-term thinking, by the desire to juice growth or prop up asset prices in the here and now, regardless of the long-term costs. But a truly healthy economy, it's not one that lurches from bubble to bust to bailout. It's one that grows steadily and sustainably over time, one that rewards innovation and productive investment, not speculation and rent-seeking. Those are the principles I'd like to see guiding our economic policy: a humility about the limits of our knowledge, a respect for market forces, and a focus on long-term sustainability over short-term expediency. Is it a perfect formula? No. But I believe it's a better foundation for navigating the challenges and uncertainties ahead, for building an economy that works for everyone, not just the fortunate few. And look, I know these are complex issues. Reasonable people can disagree on the best path forward. But if there's one thing I hope we can all agree on, it's that the status quo isn't working. The erratic policymaking, the boom and bust cycles, the socialization of losses and privatization of gains, it's not sustainable, it's not just, and it's not the path to long-term prosperity. So as we watch this latest drama unfold in the banking industry, let's not lose sight of the bigger picture, of the structural issues and policy choices that brought us to this point, and of the need for a new approach, one grounded in humility and respect for markets, and in a commitment to long-term flourishing. It won't be easy. There will be difficult trade-offs and hard choices along the way, but if we can summon the wisdom and the will to make those choices, I believe a brighter economic future lies ahead, for the banks, for businesses, and for all of us who rely on a stable and well-functioning financial system. That's our show for today. As always, I'd love to hear your thoughts. Do you agree that our economic policy making has become too erratic and interventionist? What principles do you think should guide us going forward? Let me know in the comments or shoot me an email. And if you enjoyed today's episode, please hit that subscribe button and leave us a review. It really does make a difference. Until next time, I'm Eric Cochran. Thanks for joining me on the Sandstorm.